This is Geek Gab with your host, Dornall, and me, Daddy Warpig. We are back, Geek Gab, for Monday, March 18th, 2024. So, I just heard some news that has me so excited, I can't even tell you how thrilled I am.
Daddy Warpig, I am on the edge of my seat. Hang on. I don't have my camera on, so I'd have to physically do it. Take my word for it, everybody. I am on the edge of my seat. What is this news?
Not only are they making the next chapter in the Dune saga, which is Dune Messiah, not Children of Dune, like I said last week. That's my mistake. Sorry. But they are also starting a Dune original series on streaming.
Okay. Unexpected, but not surprising. Tell me more.
Now, here's the thing about an original series. What's so great about them is, you see, the movies are what they call an adaptation, where they take pre-existing material and adapt it for a new media. So, like, there's a comic book out for Dune now, a graphic novel for Dune, that's an adaptation. The movies are an adaptation. The TV series on sci-fi 20 years ago were adaptations of Dune books. They had Dune, Dune Messiah, Children of Dune. But this that's coming out is not an adaptation. It is like the Halo TV series, like the Resident Evil TV series. It's an original series, which means it has virtually nothing to do with any currently written Dune books. Even the Dune books written by Brian Herbert, the son of Frank Herbert, it is completely made up by streaming series writers.
Pure fan fiction, in other words.
And I am literally, physically incapable of telling you how excited I am for this show.
Now, I'm going to venture a guess here. Is that because if we were to quantify your excitement, say, using a number line, that your excitement would fall on zero?
I want to describe this to you. This is the quote for the premise. Someone responded to my post today. This is the premise of the show.
The premise of the show, I had to get the joke in first. The premise of the show is to get more eyeballs and subscriptions to streaming services and make money off of another tie-in.
And you will understand my excitement when you hear this premise.
Okay, let's go.
Set 10,000 years before the events of Dune, the series follows sisters Valia and Tula Harkonnen as they combat forces that threaten the future of humankind and establish the fabled sect known as the Bene Gesserit.
Oh, dear. Well, that just piqued my excitement. I also cannot tell you just how excited I am about that story now that I know what it's about.
And that is so streaming. That is just such an absolute streaming service thing to do. I don't even know who's making it, but you can see how that sounds like so many things. The series is called Dune Prophecy. But you can see how it sounds like so many things that would really just come out of the current studio system for Dune Prophecy.
Well, what do you mean by that, Warpig?
Well, I think I mentioned, I may have mentioned the Resident Evil TV series.
Didn't see that one. I let my brother watch those and ask him how they are later.
I watched it and I believe I reviewed it on the show. It was awful.
I remember
So
that part.
it's okay, I'm looking at the Dune Prophecy page now. It's going to be broadcast on Max, which used to be HBO, but they decided having a easily recognizable name that people could connect with that would have, a connection with quality television that people enjoyed with the Sopranos and other prestige television. They decided that having a connection with a positive brand name that people could enjoy was a bad idea to have, so they just renamed it Max. So, they're broadcasting this on Max, and it's supposed to be a prequel to the Dune movie, and golly,
I'm trying to look at the I'm trying to look at the page, and I was going to share it, but it's the cast looks too terrible. I don't know what we're going to do. I can't show. I think we might get booted off YouTube if I show it.
It is, all the primary characters, and I want to count here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 characters listed as a main cast, all of them but two are women, and you have to get down to number 10 before you hit the first man. The showrunner is a, what I'm saying is this is a modern audience's feminist show.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. I have a slightly different perspective. I think it's just for the audience. Isn't it mostly women who watch streaming shows these days?
Of Dune?
Of anything.
They mostly make shows that don't appeal to men.
Yeah.
And Amazon admitted as such when they completely retooled Silk. Now, Silk is a Spider-Man character, a Spider-Man side character. She's one of those people that they all of a sudden decided to make a ton of, who are people who are not Spider-Man but have all the same powers of Spider-Man that Sony has the rights to, that they're making a streaming service on Amazon for. And Amazon realized that all the garbage they make that is for the modern audience doesn't get any ratings. And all of the shows that get ratings are like Reacher, which are oriented towards men. So instead of making a female-oriented superhero show, they wanted to retool it to make it a male-oriented streaming show. If women mostly watch streaming shows, it's because if it's not coming from Korea, it's mainly oriented towards modern audiences, which means it's not oriented towards anybody. And so it very rarely gets watched by anyone, and more people who watch it are women. Modern streaming sucks. It's garbage. There are few exceptions. But for the most part, it's just absolutely worthless.
And we may have a chicken and egg problem here, because to my point, think about the worst part of streaming. It's not the terrible shows. It's the commercials. And commercials are all probably 99% targeted to women. Right? So there's a lot of that going on too. You know, they are the audience. The problem is, are these weird feminist, let's take a science fiction, you know, typically a male interested, category for males who their males are interested in, and turn it into something that women would like. Is that actually what they want? We know the answer is, right? Do you remember, of course you remember Star Wars, The Mandalorian. You actually watched it. Turns out that women don't want shows about female superheroes and fighters and everything like that. They kind of want Baby Yoda. Which makes the Dune thing even weirder. It's the same sort of thing. Why are you making a show that really only dudes are going to be interested in, and try to make it something women are going to be interested in? And the way you go about it isn't going to appeal to women. Oh, it's funny that you mentioned Reacher, because the women in my life did appreciate Reacher. And part of that was the action. Part of that was the very female-friendly eye candy.
So the show has finished filming, and it's supposed to premiere in late 2024, once they've done with all the special effects and stuff. I'm sorry, there's actually 3 males out of the 12 characters. So, you know.
Wow. 3.
Yeah, it just
which is amazing, because you spend the entirety of Dune watching it thinking, when is someone just gonna stab one of these Bene Gesserits, right? You know, there's that famous line that, you know, the Bene Gesserit witch must leave. You can practically hear the crowd cheering at that point. Even in the source material, I'm not sure that's the way you want to go.
I just,
We broke him.
These shows are not designed. For whatever reason, these shows are not designed to be successful. And at some point, they are the people in charge of it and this is from Film Rant and Mark Kern have both said that these attitudes that are embedded so deeply at many of these companies are so deeply embedded and so toxic and so ineradicable that someone could come in and take over the company, but you couldn't get rid of these, that there's just no way of getting rid of all the people who have these ideas. There's no way of cleaning house. So the only thing that's going to do anything is by these companies going out of business. And it seems like these companies are just as happy to do that. They're really, really excited to go out of business. And to be honest, people are talking about how streaming failed as a concept. And I'm not so sure streaming as a concept failed because it was tied up at the same time that everything has been failed, even business models that have been proven to have succeeded for a long time. Publishing books is failing, movies are failing, music is getting raked over the coals, video game studios are going out of business. A lot of things are failing now because people, these companies are just producing garbage that the public doesn't want. And so you look at this, things like this being produced, it's going to be garbage. There's nothing about this product. There's nothing about this project that says it was made with the audience in mind, that it was made because they genuinely think the audience is going to be excited for this. And there are dozens of different things you could do in the Dune universe. First off, there's dozens of different better science fiction ideas that you could do besides Dune. But there's dozens of different things you could do in the Dune universe that would be more exciting and more audience-pleasing than whatever this is. You know, the founding of the Bene Gesserit. Who cares? Literally no one cares. It's a recipe for a bunch of people sitting around talking and doing nothing about people establishing a group of characters that no one really liked anyway. A bunch of arrogant, condescending people who, let's face it, are basically villains. I mean, the Bene Gesserit are the bad guys, you know? The Harkonnens are monsters. And it's one of the weaknesses of Dune. It's one of the bad things about Dune is that Frank Herbert tried to make it so that everyone in Dune was a bad guy. It's one of his postmodern hippie 60s sensibility thing where they were in the middle of all that garbage that would go on to poison Hollywood for so long and poison culture for so long, where they're like, oh, there's no such thing as virtue. Oh, there's no such thing as decency. Oh, everybody's, you know, really a bad guy. They're trying to make it is a at its core, basically, and what people respond to in the story, what people want out of the story is you have a kid who's a good, decent kid, who's the son of a noble father. And I don't mean noble in the sense of blood. I don't mean noble in the sense of aristocracy. I mean, Duke Leto Atreides literally is a noble man. He lives to help the people under his rule. He genuinely wants to help them. And he gets, you know, ambushed by the emperor. He gets ambushed by the Harkonnen, who are absolutely evil. The Harkonnen are, and the emperor is siding with the Harkonnen. I mean, basically, Dune is Game of Thrones, 40 years, 30 years early. I think the first Game of Thrones novel came out in 1996. It was basically 30 years early, where evil, miserable people do things to evil, miserable people, and the one noble person gets screwed and murdered early on. In the book, in the first book, and then the classic story is, okay, this surviving child of this murdered Duke goes out into the wilderness, finds a bunch of fighters, inspires them, they come back, wreak vengeance on the evil people, take the throne from the unworthy emperor, and becomes king, and eventually brings paradise to this desert planet. That's a really classic story. It's a really, motivating story. And in this kind of story, the Bene Gesserit are basically the evil, manipulating cabal of wizards behind the throne who've been controlling events for almost 1,000 generations,
Indeed, they're responsible for the existence of the Harkonnens, aren't they?
Yeah. So they are villains. The so a story about the founding of the Bene Gesserit characters that people who watch the Dune movies are naturally going to feel antipathy towards. Nobody saw them as being heroes. And all you're trying to do is to serve them up to the audience as if they were heroes, or as if founding their order is something people are going to want to see. Nobody wants to see that. Nobody cares. And this is going to be, again, one of those series that it's going to be impossible to criticize, because if you criticize it, you hate women. So that's going to be the rap on anyone who says either this is badly conceived or it's badly made. It's going to be one of those untouchable holy shows, and it's just going to be, even if it was well written, even if it was acted really well, it's going to be it's terribly conceived, and so isn't going to be a big success because it's a story no one wants to hear. You know, a story that might be good from the Dune universe would be, people talked about the Butlerian Jihad, where people rebelled against thinking machines. That's a story people might be interested in hearing about, where one group of people controls the thinking machines, so they control society in a bunch of other people got sick of it and rebelled against it and overthrew the thinking machines, destroyed the AI. That has promise. Not this. This is trash. And that's just the idea of it. Just the concept of it is a bad idea. And then the execution of it isn't going to be good either. Because it's going to be a bunch of, you know, it's going to be nine girl bosses sitting around conspiring to girl boss the entire galaxy for the next 10,000 years. And people just don't care.
Absolutely. You know what? Here's an example from this week. Not everybody doesn't get it, but I think your comparison to Game of Thrones was apt in another way. I think studios are willing to burn a lot of cash to try to find or create another one of those cultural phenomenon. I didn't see any Game of Thrones, but I was the odd man out at a lot of times. And they would love to get that with the movie tie-in, and maybe they're hoping to catch on a resurgence of interest. Granted, of course they chose, as you mentioned, they chose a terrible subject and probably a terrible implementation of it. Obviously, I can't say because I haven't seen it yet. Here's an example of people trying to you talked about the feminist or the women-centric angle. Of course, the story's women-centric, but there's a ton of programming that is out there for women. Most of it, in fact, like I alluded to earlier, advertisements all over the internet will not shut up about this new miniseries, this drama. Have you seen commercials for this character piece called Apples Never Fall?
No, I haven't seen anything.
Okay. It's just a story about this rich family, and the kids are grown up and the parents are retired, and something happens. The mother goes missing. There's a ton of drama. They all turn on each other. This is soap opera stuff. And it's got a couple of great actors in it.
That sort of thing has been prime fodder for drama for thousands of years. That could be good.
Forever, right? If they just wanted to make something that would make money or that would appeal to people, they would make something like that. And speaking of burning piles of money, they got the parents played by Sam Neill and Annette Bening. So they, okay. They're
solid actors.
They're good actors. So you get your money's worth, I guess. And just that's it. Like we know that they know how to do it. We know, and they being, you know, producers in general, we know that they know how to make a competent drama. Maybe some of it was paint by numbers, right? You know, there's nothing new under the sun, right? But we know they know how to do that. So that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about that. They are willing to set pallets of money on fire just to try to be the next Game of Thrones or the next The Walking Dead or whatever. The show that everyone's watching.
Yeah, but the stuff they're making has no chance of being that. Not. Just, there are certain things, certain stories that people will innately like and want to see. And this story isn't it. this story does not appeal to people. It won't even appeal to the audience that they're ostensibly going for, which is, you know, women. They keep on trying to make and remake this for the modern audience garbage, but women keep on not showing up for it because it's not stuff that, by and large, women are interested in. And there are always exceptions, but I mean, there are exceptions in the sense that there are specific women who do like science fiction, specific women who do like fantasy. But, you know, the Marvels was supposed to be a female-centric show, and yet 60% of the people who showed up for it were men. Women just aren't showing up for all these projects that are supposed to be aimed at women, and they're making bad stories. It's terrible storytelling. It's terrible movie making. And they absolutely need to be doing something different. They need to be doing something better. But they're not. And so the only thing, again, we're going back to what Film Threat and what other people have said, which is the only way they're going to be fixed at this point is they're going to have to be replaced. They're going to have to go out of business because there is no they have made it clear that they are not going to make the rational choice. So they're going to have the consequences of their choices come due.
Well said.
And I just, I don't care at this point.
Well, you cared approximately 30 minutes worth. And you got all the care out of your system.
I don't care about saving them. I don't care about trying to save Star Wars or trying to save Star Trek or trying to save the comic book industry. They can't be saved because the people who are running it refuse to do the simple small things they know that they need to do in order to save it. You cannot save a person who refuses to be saved. If someone is literally drowning and you throw them a life preserver and they immediately start swimming the other way because the life preserver is white and that's racist. Well, that's their problem.
Captain should have been more inclusive with their life preservers.
So, let them burn. and I don't mean that cruelly. It's not like I'm saying, oh, yes, I want to see them fail. It's just you literally can't save someone.
They made their bed. Let them lie in it.
You literally can't save someone who has made the choice to destroy themselves. They've chosen this path of self-destruction, and you can't force them, because that's what you'd have to do at this point. You'd have to force them off of it, and you can't force them off of it. All we can do is, you know, we have people who are making culture on their own, people who are, you know, making good stuff, and let the behemoths pass into the night. So, but there are good streaming shows out there. One of which is Masters of the Air.
Nice.
What I did there?
That was an excellent segue. Nailed it.
It's on, and we talked about this last week. We talked about this a couple weeks before. It just finished this Thursday. So all the episodes are out. It's on Apple TV Plus, Apple's streaming platform, which has won an Oscar now for Best Picture.
Apple. What did they make that was any good?
I believe the film was called Coda. And it was a drama about a deaf person. And I don't know what else it was about because I didn't watch it. And I'm not saying it's bad. I didn't like read the description of it and hurl it away from me in disgust. But it didn't really pique my interest either.
Oh, yeah. It won Best Picture, huh?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And there have been other streaming movies on Apple that have come and gone that have gotten really good responses that have just not quite hit big because they came from a standing start. They didn't have any pre-existing audience, so they had to come from basically nothing. Like Netflix had their huge disc rental business. When they started a streaming service, people got it as part of their disc rental business. They had a huge built-in audience. Amazon had Amazon Prime, so when they started their streaming service, it was part of your Amazon Prime. You got their streaming service for free. And other companies, when they started their streaming service, they had a back catalog of TV shows and movies. Disney obviously had all the Disney movies, and Disney made TV shows. Like at that point, they had Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and other things. Paramount had Star Trek, and they also had the deep back catalog of the Star Trek movies. And then they had, there was also Star Trek. And then you had NBC and ABC had their TV shows. CBS had a lot of their TV shows. And a lot of these legacy networks didn't have a lot of current stuff. And their older stuff is too old to really pull modern audiences in. So Apple had to go from a standing start and really work to get people to subscribe to their service because they weren't giving it for free with anything. And then paying for their service, also they had a brand. Apple has a brand it has of, which translated into the motion picture and television realm is prestige TV, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the soccer show, Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso.
Which is a great and funny TV show. You watched that, didn't you?
I watched the first season. I think great and funny is well overblown here.
Oh, that's right. You didn't like it. I liked it.
Well, we don't have to get into it, but.
But their shows have to be, they have to have a certain minimum budget to really reach the quality that Apple's going for. Apple is not like Netflix. Netflix has made a lot of shovelware. Amazon has made a lot of shovelware.
Expensive looking shovelware.
But Apple really tries to find quality projects and put money behind quality projects with the hope that they will be successful. And so they produce a lot fewer shows and a lot fewer movies than other streaming services do. But now they've been doing it for so long that they have a back catalog that is of higher quality than Netflix, of higher quality than Amazon, who were their most, you know, direct competitors. They haven't had, you know, decades of TV to fall back on. And a lot of Apple's stuff, I don't like, and I'm not interested in. And I'm not trying to put it down or defend it. I'm just trying to describe their brand and their approach to streaming. I've watched a few Apple streaming TV shows. There was an alien invasion show that I talked about that I watched, and it was okay. They had two seasons of it. It wasn't great, but it was okay. They had a TV show, I think it's called Severance, that a lot of people really liked, and I thought that was okay. It wasn't great, but it was okay. It was more cerebral and less visceral as far as being appealing goes. And so their goal is to find independent projects and to find ones that are either completed and seem successful, or find ones that are going into production that seem great or seem like they have potential, and put money behind that in connection with other production companies to help them realize their vision. So that's what Masters of the Air is. It's prestige television. HBO as a network, they tend to focus on prestige television too. They don't make, you know, you'd never see HBO nowadays making a show like The Simpsons, right? That's right. Just doesn't fit with HBO's brand. You'd never see Apple making a show like The Simpsons. What you do see is Apple buying the rights to Peanuts and broadcasting all the old Peanuts movies, and then underwriting, producing new Peanuts movies in the same vein as the old ones. Or supposedly. I haven't watched any of their new Peanuts comics. Because that's a brand with history, and that's kind of classy. It's not crass. So once you understand their, you know, Big Mouth on Netflix, Apple, I don't think, would ever make something like Big Mouth. They would never make something like Rick and Morty. So, okay, we've covered that subject thoroughly. Masters of the Air, like I was saying last week, it's about the 100th Air Group in World War II, and it starts from when they fly from the United States to England to begin the air campaign. It's made by Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg, who did The Pacific, who did Band of Brothers. Band of Brothers, about the paratroopers, 101st Airborne, starts with them in Georgia undergoing their basic training. This does not cover basic training or training in the airplanes, really. Training on flying and stuff, really. It starts on them being shuttled over, flying their airplanes over to England. And then it ends pretty much at the end of World War II. And not to spoil anything, but the Nazis lose. So The Americans do, in point of fact, win the war. So just a little spoiler alert for those of you watching the show, the Americans do eventually win. However, what is interesting about the show is because this is, like Band of Brothers, based on a memoir and based on real events. And I don't know which events have been fictionalized, which characters have been confined or whatever. But, you know, you're watching Band of Brothers and they're in, I believe, the Ardennes. And you have two soldiers who are great and funny. And if it were a fictional series, you would expect those two soldiers to keep on going on because they're great. They're funny. The audience loves them. And all of a sudden, there's a bomb that explodes when they're being shelled by the Germans. And those two guys are just gone. They're just wiped out. Bam. Their story is cut off right there because it's based on real events in a real war. And there's no guarantee that any particular soldier that you find likable is going to live. So this is... These bombers are engaging in what British bombers, British crewmen, British pilots are calling suicide bombing raids. The British preferred nighttime raids, where they would send out tons of bombers to drop bombs all over the place in Germany. And because it's happening at night, it's not precision bombing, it's just kind of indiscriminate bombing. Whereas the Americans were engaged in precision bombing. They had a brand new bomb site that was one of the critical secrets of the war, which enabled them to put bombs accurately on single buildings in the middle of a huge city without touching buildings on either side. And I'm not saying that's perfect, obviously, but that's what this bomb site would do. And if they were going down, they were ordered to destroy this bomb site so the Germans didn't get a hold of it, so that it would be maintain a secret so that the Allies could keep their precision of bombs. So what Americans would do is they would send out these massive raids of bombers during the day to bomb Germany in precision raids so they could target railways, so they could target supply depots, so they could target trains themselves, bridges, camps, factories, headquarters, whatever, concentrations of troops, whatever. And it was considered suicidal by the British because when you're flying in the day, you could be seen by people on the ground and they could send up fighters and the fighters could see you and shoot you down. And at the beginning of the war, you couldn't have fighter cover once you crossed over the continent. The fighters had to turn back and go to Germany. So all you had to defend yourself with was the gunners in all the positions around the ship. You had a nose gunner with two machine guns. You had two waist gunners, a tail gunner, a top gunner, a ball gunner on the bottom. And you had to fight the Luftwaffe fighters who would swarm your formation, and you had, you know, all these planes in one wing flew in close formation so they could support each other. So they had this box in the air where airplanes could shoot the planes coming at them, but could also cover everybody else in the formation. And the casualties for this unit were absolutely horrendous. They would have like 30 something planes in the unit, and they would all fly out. And of these 30 something, it's like 33, 32, I don't remember, would fly out, and like 15 of them would come back from a raid. Half the unit would be wiped out in one day. And on another day, 18 of them would fly out for a mission. And being down so low, they would be so vulnerable to German attack, and like one plane came back. And sometimes the planes would ditch in the channel and could get picked up and brought back. And one time a plane landed up in Scotland, and so the plane is crashed, and they eventually got the pilot and crews back. And there were always more crews being trained in America and more planes being flown in eventually, but the casualties they were taking was absolutely horrendous. And so over and over and over again, you would get used to people being around. And if you got to 25 missions, then you could go home. But for the longest time in the show, nobody would get to 25 missions because it was suicide to go on these bombing missions, and people were just going out on their first mission and not coming back. Wow. Or their second mission or their third mission. It just absolutely horrendous casualties in the air. But it was the key to defeating Nazi Germany. It's the reason why their production facilities were destroyed. I watched a video today on a YouTube channel called The Fat Electrician. And there was fighting by, I believe it was the 3rd Armored Division, and they took a month to advance 5 miles through the hedgerows after the D-Day landing. And General Omar Bradley, because they were just getting wiped out. The Germans were absolutely entrenched, and the American Sherman tanks were the tip of the spear, and that's what that's where they got their name. This division is the tip of the spear. Again, I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember it. People who know the military, I apologize for the details. I've no doubt misremembered. They were the tip of the spear, but they just couldn't advance against this fierce German opposition, except just so very slowly. So finally he said, okay, what we need to do is we are going to bomb the crap out of them, just bomb and bomb and bomb them. And once they're bombed to smithereens, then we'll advance. And once they did that, they started advancing rapidly. And the people who were in charge of doing that were units like the 100th. They were the ones in these suicidal daylight precision bombing raids who were losing planes and losing crews. And sometimes the crews bailed out. Sometimes they were, the Luftwaffe was shooting them down as they bailed out of these planes, shooting down the parachuters in the midair. Sometimes they were caught and sent to prisoner of war camps. And there's a whole section later on in the series where they follow some of the pilots that you've been following through the series as they go to prisoner of war camps, and you watch what being imprisoned by the Luftwaffe is like. And then they switch over to the SS when the Luftwaffe is taken away from being in charge of the prisoner of war camps. You get to watch what that switchover is like. It's just brutal every step of the way. And it's a different brutality than being an infantryman all the time. But it is no less absolutely wrenching. From what I know, it would be absolutely insane to have a functioning infantry unit that regularly took 50% or 96% casualties, that was reconstituted in a matter of weeks and sent back to the front line. But that was kind of a regular thing for these bomber crews. And I'm not trying to say the bomber crews had it worse or that the infantry had it worse. I'm just saying that the things people had to endure in World War II, the things they had to do were beyond all imagination. And that's kind of the purpose of these series. That's kind of the purpose of the Pacific and Band of Brothers and Masters of the Air, is to familiarize people, to teach people, look, this is what World War II was about. This is what these people had to go through. This is what fighting in this war was like. And it was inhuman, and it was brutal, and it was it ground them down to have their friends just disappear.
That's got to be murder on morale, not to mention, you know, the people.
Yeah. I mean, they had a new crew come on, a new crew come on, and at the end of the they did three missions their first 3 days. And if I'm remembering correctly, literally every other new crew had come on with them was dead at the end of the 3 days. Of the, you know, like 10 or 12 planes that landed with them, that had trained with them, that were all crews they knew, by the end of their first 3 days, their first three missions, they were the only plane left. Everybody else had been shot down. Whether they had bailed out or whether they had just blown up, they were the only crew left. That's your first 3 days in the war. That's your first 3 days in combat. That's just pillage. So if you want me to go into, you know, like technical details, Austin Butler, who plays Fade Rotha in Dune Part 2, does an excellent job in this show. I would be very surprised if he doesn't get more and more prominent roles because of his performance in this show and his performance in Dune Part 2. He would deserve it. He does an absolutely excellent job in this series. And the other main actors all do great jobs. I don't know how they did it, but they found people who could credibly look like 1940s people. They don't look like modern people. They don't look like, you know, Gen Xers and millennials and Zoomers trying to look like 1940s people. They're very credible in their roles. And the performances are all around solid to great performances. The people they have cast as the weathered officers, and right now I'm thinking of the American colonel in the very last episode who liberates the prisoner of war camp. He just looks perfect. He looks like an old school army colonel would look. Absolutely fabulous casting. He doesn't look like a Hollywood star trying to play a colonel. He literally looks like a colonel. He has the kind of character to his face that is just so impressive. The casting on this was so well done. The uniforms, the vehicles were great. The CGI, and you know they have to be using CGI, because when someone looks out at the back of their plane and they see, you know, 50 flying fortresses in formation, there are not that many flying fortresses in the world. it has to be CGI, but it doesn't look fake. They don't overdo it. When they can use real props and real plane, they use it. When they have to use CGI, they use it, but only as much as they have to. So the technical details are great. The performances are great. It is a weakness of the type of combat they're doing that it is not as visceral as Band of Brothers, which is infantry, which is always going to be more visceral. So the first four episodes are a little bit slower than you would be used to with Band of Brothers. But after the fifth episode, it picks up and becomes really excellent. The first four episodes are good. The last five episodes are great. So I'm not saying, oh, you have to wait to the fourth, to the fifth episode for things to get good. No, the show is good right out of the gate. But it gets really, really good at the fifth episode and after that. I would highly recommend the show. And it does a phenomenal job of putting you in the pants or putting you in the time and place that these people existed in and giving you a feel as much as a TV show can of what it must have been like for them.
So, which, as you said, absolutely brutal.
Absolutely brutal.
And it doesn't even.
I mean, there is some gore in the scenes, but it's not, you know, it's not Saving Private Ryan in the air. They save violence and gore for when it's necessary. They don't pour buckets of it over your head. But it is. The brutality comes from the performances and just, man, they have, because you don't know who's coming back. You don't know who's going to live. You don't know who's going to die. And the commanding officers get up in the air tower, the air traffic control tower, when they're waiting for the airplanes to come back, and they literally count how many planes make it back. And you hear the count going up and up, and then all of a sudden it stops, and there's just nobody else there and nobody else coming back. And you're like, holy crap, this is how many planes they lost. And you know that because you know how many planes they took off. And it's just this sinking feeling, because even then you don't know necessarily who made it back or who didn't make it back. So they use that as tension in the series, because even up to the last episode, you don't know of these characters. You've got to know who's going to make it to the end of the war. Because when they're being marched from camp to camp just ahead of the Allies' advance, when the Germans don't want to let their prisoners of war go, you don't know if they're going to be suddenly shot by the SS or not, or who's going to be suddenly shot, or, you know, there's... One night when they're being marched at night, they get strafed by a P-51, an American fighter plane. So, yeah, it's based on a real war story, and so nobody has plot armor in that sense. Everybody could always die at any time.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have to give it a try. That sounds great.
It is well worth a watch. I would highly recommend it to anyone. You know, within reason. If war stories aren't your thing, then, you know, of course, don't. It's a war story. There's war.
Don't put it on for the kids.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, I'm glad you enjoyed it that much.
So am I. I really am. I'm happy to say that this is at least one production team that didn't hasn't collapsed into worthlessness over the years. That there's still quality shows. We're still capable of producing quality shows, even on streaming. So, yeah.
Vanishing breed, vanishing type of creator. Well, good. Is there anything else on the docket you want to talk about, Daddy Warpig?
I watched Anaconda for the first time ever a week or two ago.
I laugh because I keep seeing it in the menu in whatever streaming service I'm poking around in, and I every time I see it, I think, man, this would be a perfect stupid movie for stupid movie night, because I've never seen it and it looks stupid. But I haven't done it. But you didn't resist. You weren't able to resist. You actually watched it.
It is actually a lot better than you think it would be. And it's a lot of fun.
Wow.
And the guy who's in it, the old guy, who's Angelina Jolie's dad, who is also John Voight, he does such a good job. He just turns in this absolutely phenomenal performance. Most of the rest of the cast, you know, they do an all right job. Ice Cube, not as much, but it's a fun monster movie. Yeah. It's a fun monster movie, and it's a lot better than you think it is. Don't get me wrong. It is a monster movie. I'm not saying it's anything besides a monster movie, but it is a really good monster movie. So
that's what you want. You see a monster. It's a movie about a monster. You want it to be – you just want it to be what it says on the tin.
Yeah. It's you know, it's not a political diatribe. It's not made to make you feel stupid. It just is a great John Voight acts his ass off. He acts his heart out. He is too good for that movie, but it really makes it a great movie. You know, there's a monster, there's people, they're on a river, but it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. So, if you haven't seen Anaconda and you're in the mood for a monster movie, watch Anaconda. It's worth it.
Awesome. next stupid movie night for sure.
That's it. That's everything I had for today. I did want to get an Anaconda mention in because somebody threw it up on the on Twitter today and I saw it and I'm like, oh yeah, I watched that. I should mention
that. All right. Back in the high 90s, Anaconda. Well, I'm glad. I'm gonna have to do that then for stupid movie night. I hope everybody who listened to the show or listens to it later, if nothing else, remembers to go back and watch or rewatch Anaconda. That's amazing. But I'm ready to say goodnight, Daddy Warpig. It was fun chatting with you as always. Do we have any news to share for upcoming shows?
Oh, I have no idea. There are some shows that are starting soon that I may have to watch. There was a show that somebody sold me on, and then I watched the first episode and it unsold me on completely. I'm like, you lied to me, you YouTuber, you lied. So I'm not going to watch that guy again. But yeah. I don't even remember. There's new series that are starting soon, some of which look like either I actually am interested in seeing them or they look like the kind of thing where it's kind of like, oh, that's what we cover. I need to watch that, but I don't remember right now. And that's things that won't even be here for, you know, like 2 months because they're going to have 6 or 7 or 8 episodes.
Well, so, I was thinking more in line with the Geek Gab. Do we have anything coming up that listeners might be interested in?
No, I have no idea what we're doing next week. No idea.
Awesome. Me neither.
I don't even have like a vague idea. of, I don't even know what movies are going to be released for next week.
Oh, I have an announcement. Last week, I did, on Wednesday, I went on the Dunder Moose stream.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a really good chat. He's over there here on YouTube. This is Dunder Moose. I had a really good time talking with him. We basically talked about D&D and the Broasar for like 3 hours. So put it on, listen to it. I think it's great.
You should put a link to that in the...
I should put a link to that in the show notes. Absolutely. Yes. That's all it. Maybe something cool will happen in D&D this week. If it does, you'll find out.
Shock of all shocks, the American Society of Magical N-Word, not the N-Word, the other N-Word, had an absolutely devastating opening. Made like $11 million or something.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a new movie with David Alan Grier.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Seriously, you haven't seen commercials for this?
Nope. The only commercials I've been allowed to watch for the past week are for Apples Never Fall, because it's the only one that plays.
The most dangerous and deadly thing in the universe is a white person who's uncomfortable. And there's this trope in movies that Spike Lee called magical Negro. And it was showcased in movies like The Legend of Bagger Vance, the golfing movie with Will Smith, where he's like this magical, wise person who's helping, I think, Matt Damon with his golf swing or something.
Yeah. I'm familiar with the trope.
So this movie is called The League of Magical Negroes. And it's about a whole league of these people who go around saving Black America from getting killed because they keep white people comfortable. Every time a white person gets uncomfortable around a Black person, they appear magically and soothe over the situation. The film did not open well.
No.
It's not popular with people. Apparently, and this is a shock to everyone involved, white people found a movie which says they're the most evil thing in the universe not appealing.
You don't say.
And Black people found a movie which says that their primary purpose for existing is to make white people comfortable. Insulting.
Wow.
So.
Hey, it just goes to show, you can't please all the people all the time.
I assumed you had heard about this movie. Because I've been hearing about it since the trailer first released.
Yeah, I think I might have seen a trailer a long time ago. I vaguely recall hearing about it and then promptly forgot it.
That's okay. Everybody else will promptly forget about it too.
Excellent. Excellent.
It's been sitting on the shelves for 2 years.
We have the... we have Bradford Walker, Society of Magical Box Office Bombs. Thanks for hanging out. Drop a gem at the end. You too, Megabuster Shepherd. Glad to see you. Society of Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity. Don't I know it? Wow.
Is it my turn?
It is your turn, Daddy Warpig. Save us from the endless trash that is television in Hollywood, and sign us off for the night.
I just, it's high quality, the movies out there. So if you want a, if you want an antidote to the high quality modern movies like Madam Web and The Magical Society, go see Masters of the Air. Go watch Masters of the Air or Anaconda. Both of those are, I'm not even joking. Both of those are worth watching, it, as long as you know what you're getting in for. They are absolutely fun. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Thanks for tuning in live. We want to thank everybody who will be tuning in later. It's been Geek Gab for Monday, March 18th, 2024. I was counting the years. I'm like, it can't have been that long. And it actually has. 2024. We're here just about every Monday night, same time, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. And feel free to subscribe, click the bell icon, donate to our Patreon or Subscribestar, because we could really, really use it. Help us defray the cost of the show. We are signing off for today, folks. But don't you worry. Don't you fret. We will be back.